Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
Pelican Brewing presents The Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague hit the big stories you've heard about and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Gosh, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
Pelican invites you to take a beach break at one of their coastal locations. Pacific City, Tillamook, Cannon Beach, Lincoln City, and coming soon to Rockaway Beach. Pelican Brewing. Born at the beach.
All right, Daily Ticker time on a Wednesday. Brought to you as always by our great friends at Pelican Brewing. Don't forget about this weekend, the good vibes at the 26th annual Cape Kiwana Longboard Classic, proudly presented by Pelican Brewing. It's the largest annual serving event in the Pacific Northwest, September 19th to the 21st. That's right, that's this weekend. Kicks off Friday night. Live music all weekend long. Enjoy award-winning craft beer from Pelican at their original location in Pacific City. Let's talk some college football with one of our favorites, Bill Connolly, ESPN underscore Bill C on Twitter is where you can find him, the author of the S&P Plus model, and the author of a new book that we just talked to him a couple weeks about, Forward Progress, the definitive guide to the future of college football. Bill, good morning to you, ESPN college football writer, I should add as well. When I look at the first couple of weeks of the season in the S&P Plus, there has been a lot of movement. What has surprised you the most through the first 3 weeks of the season? And as you look at the rankings going into week four, what is standing out the most to you?
Yeah, it is funny. I mean, I think, you know, we have had about the same number of teams move up and down as usual, but we've had a lot of very noteworthy teams moving up and down. And, you know, South Carolina suddenly, you know, just maybe never getting it together. Kansas State never getting it together. SMU, like a lot of teams that we kind of had semi-high expectations for haven't really clicked at all. And, of course, Clemson leads that list as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's been, you know, most of the teams we thought were going to be good are probably going to end up pretty good here. But, you know, it does feel like there have been quite a few surprises there at the top.
I know we're getting ahead of ourselves, but we don't know if we'll have you next week. And one team is on a bye this weekend while the other is having their...
I would say they've been on a bye all season, but I digress.
Okay, all right. Thanks for interrupting my question about Penn State. Oregon's playing Oregon State. We all tend to not feel as excited about that game as we once did for obvious reasons, so we assume Oregon will handle their business at home. Looking a little bit ahead, what does the SP Plus say about this matchup between Penn State and Oregon looking a week ahead of it?
Yeah, I mean, on paper, it's basically even. Penn State's a projected favorite basically by home field advantage. So, you know, neither team has, what, like 112. Penn State is the best team they played ranks 112th currently in SP Plus. The best team Oregon's played ranked 82nd. So, obviously, you know, I talk a lot about it's how you play, not who you play. They both ended up looking the part. Penn State kind of takes its time looking the part sometimes. Just kind of comes out in the most vanilla possible approach and sees what you can do against it. They've looked like they're supposed to look, and their season probably doesn't really begin until week five, assuming Oregon State doesn't pull off something pretty miraculous.
Well, on that note, Bill, I'm curious to ask you, because I remember talking to you before the season kicked off and where Oregon ranked in the S&P Plus on offense and on defense. How much have those numbers changed since the start of the year? And does the model still view Oregon the same, where maybe driven by offense and the defense more of a question mark?
Yeah, I mean, technically the defense is still more of a question mark, but obviously both units have looked, you know, mostly good. Granted, I mean, 14 points against Northwestern isn't actually impressive, but you still, you know, 30 points in three games, you're doing just fine in that regard. The first two games were pretty massive overachievement compared to projections, and then last week ended up falling a little bit short, but was fine. Like, it's hard to critique too much about that, the way they handled their first road game. So, yeah, I mean, if anything, they have overachieved. They've moved up from 7th to 2nd in SP+, and you know, I do think that typically, treating poor opponents like they should be treated is a really good way of determining who's a really good team. But you still learn something extra when they play teams with a pulse.
Is there a team, Bill, kind of putting you on the spot here? Is there a team that has been really impressive in the SP Plus that has simultaneously impressed you maybe the most so far a quarter into the season?
Well, I mean, Oregon is certainly up high on the list, not to suck up to the hosts or anything, but, you know, that's what they did to Oklahoma State was, well, it was rude, first of all, but, you know, both Oklahoma State and Montana State, I thought, would be able to do more than they actually did. And so they've absolutely looked the part. You know, I think teams like USC have done exactly what they needed to do against the competition so far. Miami obviously had a potential test last week that they kept USF at arm's length the entire time, even with a couple turnovers. Texas Tech has looked spectacular. I realize a sore subject after last week, but they've done everything they possibly could against their schedule, and probably Indiana has too. So yeah, some really fun names. I just out of pure curiosity, I took the priors completely out of SP Plus yesterday just to see what they said. That's a terrible thing to do if you're actually trying to make good predictions, but it was kind of a decent, like, who's looked the part so far. Texas Tech's number one.
Wow.
And Oregon was really high up there too. And that vibes with my eye test, I think.
Yeah, it's a fun one this weekend in Salt Lake City, too, between Texas Tech and Utah. Bill Connolly is our guest, ESPN college football writer, S&P Plus model, at ESPN_BillC on Twitter. And go check out his book that just came out, Forward Progress, the definitive guide to the future of college football. I was going to shift gears to something, but then you mentioned a team that made me kind of wonder, and this is a question we had coming into the season. Like, I think we would all argue going into the year the top tier, if you will, in the Big Ten was Penn State, Oregon, Ohio State, whatever order you want to put them in, maybe in Michigan if they could get good quarterback play. And then there's just this nether group of teams that were like, they're not bad, but are they elite? Can they be a conference title contender? Like Illinois, Indiana, Washington, USC, Nebraska. It's a big weekend for a lot of these teams. I'm just curious, when you look at both the model and just your eyes as a college football fan, like, what do you make of that next group of Big Ten teams? Which ones are you buying stock in, and which one is the model buying stock in?
Well, you know, the way USC handled Georgia Southern and Missouri State, you're like, wow, like, that's, you know, obviously they're going to beat those teams, but they were kind of merciless about it. And that's, again, that's what I look for in those games. It, you know, you can still prove something in that regard. Last week was kind of a confusing sample. Like, the offense was still mostly efficient, but it stalled a little bit. The defense had to come through and gave up some yards, but then would force a turnover. And so I don't know. I'm not quite as high on them as I was before the Purdue game, but I think they've still kind of proven what they need to prove so far. And Indiana really has been, like, they gave up a couple big plays early against Old Dominion, but it turns out, as we saw against Virginia Tech, Old Dominion can do that a little bit, and they pretty much haven't given up anything since. So they've certainly done everything they can with the schedule at hand. Illinois, I never trust. They always just seem to be able to have this mind control thing where they force turnovers, they force the guys to just drop the ball at random times. But they've done it for a year and a half almost, so maybe that's a thing. Maybe they can keep that up. But I guess in order, I would say in that second tier, it's USC, Indiana, Illinois right now. Maybe Nebraska after that, but we'll see.
You might be as equipped to answer this question as any person covering the sport in general. So Oregon State's down pretty bad right now. They just got bludgeoned by Texas Tech after waiting for a rainstorm to pass. They're probably going to get bludgeoned by their opponent in Eugene this weekend. And then they get Houston at home on a short week Friday night, and the stadium won't be packed. Their AD's coming out saying, no, he's the right guy for the job, and most people out here with a brain tend to disagree with that. If I was at Oregon State and I paid Bill Connolly whatever the fee it is that he would charge, and I say, what would you say, or how would you fix a program that was left behind but needs to be progressive and active right now so they don't completely fall off the cliff if they haven't already, What would you say or how would you fix what's happening in Oregon State as somebody that observes the entire world of college football outside of the Power Four?
Well, I mean, I wish I had a fancier answer, but I mean, it just comes down to raising money and making a good hire at the end of the day. And obviously, morale kind of impact, like one kind of impacts the other. But yeah, I mean, I think when you lose Jonathan Smith, you replace him with an insider, I guess, for a lack of a better word. Like, that made a lot of sense. But yeah, I mean, it's been pretty demoralizing this year. Not only, I mean, maybe it turns out Texas Tech's really, really, really good, and that doesn't end up being a particularly bad loss. But I mean, obviously coming right out of the gate with two home games against opponents you think you should still be able to compete with no matter what, and falling far short, especially against Cal. It's just been, yeah, it's been demoralizing, and you don't think that Trent Bray is going to get just a ton of time here to figure things out. As far as like what kind of hire to make, there are plenty of Jason X out there right now, you know, guys who have proven that they can take decent ingredients and make something good out of them. He was great at Idaho. He knows the Big Sky country, so to speak. And, he's been able to, watching his teams play against Michigan and UCLA so far this year, you just see a certain level of like, we're just going to come and be a giant pain in the butt. And, like, again, it's hard to figure out exactly what Oregon State's place is going to be moving forward, but they should still be one of the higher end programs in the new Pac-12 starting next year. And you can't waste time, losing your base, so to speak. So I would expect them to make a pretty quick move, and yeah, we'll see. I'm a big Jason Eck guy, but I think a lot of people are going to be Jason Eck people pretty soon, so I don't know if that's an option or not.
Well, I think there's a couple names out there, and he's probably one of them, I would assume, based on what you just said, that he's going to be one. But like, your top three non-Power 4 coaches that you think the minute a Power Conference team hands the reins and gives them their shot, you think could absolutely explode and become one of the new coaches that we talk about of, hey, this person's really good at what they do.
Yeah, and it is tricky right now too, because we're at a, in terms of just innovation, we're at a point where it's a lot harder to innovate on offense right now, or at least that cycle with the spread and everything has kind of run its course a little bit. The spread's kind of become the new college football offense, so it's been an interesting time to figure out like who has new ideas, who has unique ideas that you can build something around. I've been waiting for a couple of years to figure that one out and haven't yet, but in the meantime, just guys who, like I said, make themselves a pain in the butt and figure out little trick plays to just really, really frustrate you. That seems like a good place to start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Jason Eck fake quarterback sneak snap to the running back against Michigan touchdown pass was a thing of beauty.
See, mine's not awesome. Even so much, I think, about schematics. I mean, certainly there's going to be something or somebody, right, schematically. It's more like I just look at like culture program builders and
DNA
point,
traits.
Right?
Well, and that's the point Bill's making with New Mexico on the way. They're just, what you're going to get when you play them, but you don't know that right now.
Tulane and Sumrall, right? Like the same kind of deal. Yeah.
I want to sneak one more in here, Bill, and we'll let you go because we're against it. But I didn't really know where to come down on the debate going into the year of the Arch Manning hype train of like Paul Feinbaum said he's God's gift to football and best since Tebow. And it's like, I mean, I see it. He's a highly touted kid. He's waited his turn. Like, everything should go great, but it doesn't always work that way. I think even I or anybody who even questioned maybe the overhyping of him is in shock about how bad he's looked at times this year. As a fan and through the model lens, what do we make of Texas's offense, and will this derail their chance from one of the best defenses in the sport of winning a national championship this year?
Yeah, they're down to 49th in offensive FP plus.
Whoa, 49th?
They hit the mark in terms of projections. They hit the mark against San Jose State. They came up about two touchdowns short against both Ohio State and UTEP. And the most damning combination of stats that I've seen here, I'm putting together for my Friday preview. Right now, Arch, among the 136 starting quarterbacks, Arch is 124th in completion rate and 133rd in time to throw. He's taking forever to get the ball out, and he's throwing inaccurate passes when he does so. And obviously, he's not getting enough help from his receiving core. That's pretty, the offensive line hasn't looked great. Basically in the preseason, I basically said, if he's the best player and quarterback in college football, great, then nothing else matters. But if he's not, suddenly the fact that the receiving core is incredibly unproven and the offensive line is brand new, like, that could matter. And I think it's mattering a lot, but he's got the yips right now, and you tend to fix that quickly.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
It, so far, quarterly in, I know we said it was the last one. This is the last one, I think. But
last
like,
one. Final, final.
Just the quarter check-in of the calendar year of the football season, you know, about what you expected, or there's been more surprises than you expected. Where are we at the quarterly report here?
Well, it is funny because a lot of teams I had questions about, like Clemson and Texas, teams I wasn't completely sold on, have looked way worse than I expected, which is kind of funny. I'm getting a lot of credit for my questioning Clemson right now. I still thought they'd be good enough to beat Clemson or to beat right. Georgia Tech yeah. and not really flirt with losing to Troy or whatever. So they've been far worse than I expected, and so that's been kind of interesting. But at the end of the day, it does seem like some of the most just purely talented teams – Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State, Georgia, maybe Alabama, if it turns out that week one was just a weird egg and now they're great again. You know, some of those most talented teams, it still seems like they're the most trustworthy, and we'll see if Texas can rejoin that group, I guess.
Yeah, he's a must-follow for college football fans. You can go check out his book, too, that just came out, Forward Progress, A Definitive Guide to the Future of College Football, the S&P Plus model, his previews every Friday, the recaps, every phenomenal stuff for every college football fan. Give him a follow on Twitter, at @ESPN_Bill. So you can find all of his stuff at ESPN. Bill, we always appreciate the time. The Connerly Quarterly was phenomenal, and I look forward to this again in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good. Take care.
There you go. Bill Connerly of ESPN. ESPN.
Orem said famously that he said they should go look at Jason Eck when they lost Jonathan.
I mean...
And I didn't even know that name at that point. I was like, oh.
I didn't know the name until they nearly beat Oregon last year. And I'm like, who the hell is this guy? And I don't know. Who? What? Same. Jason Eck. Now I think Jason Eck is a little...
He's got bigger fish.
He's got
bigger fish on
the
plate.
He's got bigger views and goals in the long run.
Yeah.
Than Oregon State. Great stuff from Bill Connolly. And the Daily Ticker, as always, brought to you by our wonderful friends at Pelican Brewing Company. Don't forget this weekend, the 26th annual Cape Kiwanda Longboard Classic. Go hang out with our friends out there at the largest annual surfing event in the Pacific Northwest Friday through Sunday. And it all kicks off Friday night with live music. And enjoy award-winning craft beer from the Pelican original location in Pacific City. Let's stick in college football and get some NFL stuff coming up. Bottom of the hour. Start taking a little bit of a peekaboo look at this weekend. The Arch stuff that he said there, boy, oh boy, is it getting uglier for him down in Austin, Texas. And who's under pressure this weekend? It's a fun little weekend
peek-a-boo.
Of college football. A little peekaboo. Next, 105.1 FM, The Fam.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, Wednesdays are that weird time of the week in football season where it's like the recapping is kind of done. It's a little too early for a full-on preview. We're not quite there yet.
Yeah, you could do a little bit. But some of the teams we don't circle or talk about as much, you could get to them.
I got some NFL stuff coming up here for the bottom of the hour. Don't forget Lucy Burge at 9 and then Statter Story as well in the final hour of the show. I will argue, though, this weekend, you know, we had week two going into it was kind of the week everybody said, oh, this is kind of a dud. Yeah, not a lot going on. And then you had the South Florida upset over Florida. There might have been some others that I'm not remembering off the top of my head, but ended up being a decent little weekend of football. Last weekend, I would say, lived up to the hype. There were three or four really quality good games throughout the day on Saturday. You had the Clemson-Georgia Tech game early. You had the Georgia-Tennessee game. You had the Notre Dame-A&M game. Like, there were a number of really quality games between ranked teams.
Can I just... So sidebar on that, we all know what college football is. The ones that like the sport or follow it, we know what the deal is. Every weekend, we get about three or four.
Yeah.
The rest are largely not great games. It's always been that way. I heard that last week of like, it's not a great slate. I'm like, what?
You know it's going to end up being deep. There'll be a couple of games you don't know you got to keep an eye on.
Dude.
Like Ohio being in a one-score game in the fourth quarter against Ohio State. Nobody had that on their bingo card last
Friday.
Notre
Dame was as good as you could possibly ask for a primetime game. You had Ole Miss in a dogfight with Arkansas. Like some of those teams that lose or come close to winning, they don't matter. But dude, the fact that Ole Miss almost lost to Arkansas, I kind of circled the Tulane Ole Miss game, and I was like, are they vulnerable?
And they won it with their backup quarterback, and is that guy going to go do it again, right? So this is a weekend I go in. I think there's a handful of games that are very interesting, and I don't know how they will all play out. But just in terms of, like, storylines and pressure, like, Utah-Texas Tech is a good example of this right out of the gate early in the morning. That the winner of that game is probably the front runner in the Big 12. Maybe you want to throw Iowa State in there, but Kansas State is done. A handful, you know, Arizona State has looked vulnerable. Colorado's got a whole slew of issues right now, and they're going back to their other quarterback.
Yep.
So that's really for supremacy, I would argue, early in the season in the Big 12. And then you get into games of, like, Auburn-Oklahoma is fascinating because you were almost a year to the date of Jackson Arnold being benched at Oklahoma by Brent Venables.
Yeah.
He is now the starting quarterback at Auburn.
It's
Hugh Freeze came in with, like, can you do anything, Hugh Freeze? And now he's 3-0, and he's ranked in the top 25.
Yeah, I thought he was going to get fired. Right? I'm stupid now.
And they could win this weekend and go 4-0 and be 1-0 in SEC play. And on the other side is Oklahoma. Venables came in with a lot of pressure. He had to win the Michigan game. He did.
Mm-hmm.
But now you're facing your old quarterback that you sent packing because you took away his starting job, and it wasn't all Jackson Arnold's fault. Like, that game in terms of a pressure cooker is phenomenal because both fan bases are feeling confident while inside slightly terrified about the outcome, which is what I love about the sport.
Well, I mean, look, I'm never really one that roots very often for Auburn in any case, and I tend to like Oklahoma a lot because I've had family there, but I can't help but see the narrative of Mateer can't run. Their passing attack's not amazing. He only has 5 tutties through the air. What if Auburn and Jackson Arnold go in there and Arnold is pretty good and he does it with his legs and he has the go-ahead touchdown? Like, the revenge payback factor is absolutely active right now. It's a good SEC tilt. I think it's under the radar because if Oklahoma can get past Auburn, and we know they have the Red River game coming up pretty soon.
But you're
soon
not
here.
As scared about that as you were. Now, who knows? Texas is still very good defensively, but they got issues on offense.
But, man, I mean, if you can get past Auburn and look the part doing it, you've got Kent State, and then you get the Red River game, and then South Carolina, we have no idea with their quarterback. And also, man,
even when he's playing, it wasn't like they were blowing people out. They've been a disappointment early in the season.
Oklahoma's got some games to circle. So this is a big one for them. You get past this one, the schedule game may fall in your favor. The rivalry game, who knows? But I just seeing Jackson Arnold go in there and win would blow my brain because it would break it because I just don't have any good memories of watching him in an Oklahoma jersey.
No, none at all.
It was
other
terrible.
Than the remember they blew Alabama out late in the year, but that was almost more so about what they did defensively and how bad
they
Alabama
had 3
was.
Points.
Like, that was the takeaway there of how dominant they were.
What was the final of that game?
Oh,
wasn't
it was
like 21-3 though? It wasn't like the offense was lighting them up for 60 points. That was a 3.
And I want to say Milroe threw a pick 6 or threw a couple of picks. Let me see what it was from last year. So at the end of the year, the final
of
that game.
He just was not good in that jersey. So, like, to see him
24-3.
Yeah, 24-3.
Jackson Arnold in that game.
Yeah, what was his stat line?
To your whole argument here.
Yeah.
In that game, he was 9 of 11 for 68 yards. Now, he ran it 25 times for $131, which is largely what he's doing at Auburn.
That's all he did last year.
He's just a mobile quarterback, and they're using his legs. And it's working out for Auburn early. But just whenever you get, like, the ex-girlfriend coming back to town and I wasn't good enough for you, and you benched me, and now I'm back and have a chance at revenge. I'll throw one other random one at you, and I don't know how close this game is on your guys' radar going into the weekend, but it is for me because Connolly just mentioned the team who they've blown their opponents out the first 2 weeks of the season. They went on the road. It wasn't quite as good as it had looked in the first 2 games, but 3-0 is 3-0. I don't really know where I fall on USC early in the season. They did finally win a road game in the Big Ten, so congratulations to Lincoln Riley for his first.
Is that their first one?
That was his first road win as a Big Ten team.
Man.
Yep, they played a full season last year. They get Michigan State at home.
And pretty sizable favorites in that game.
Massive favorites, 18.5 points. Michigan State, we have seen look good and bad at times. Aiden Childs has that young quarterback. You know, sometimes he flashes and pops. Sometimes he throws a pick that makes you yell at your TV, like, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't that overly impressed with what USC did last weekend. Now, rain delay, right? I think that game was delayed by 2-3 hours. Little caveats you put on it that are totally fair, and time will ultimately tell. But just in terms of pressure, like, USC's next 5 games, you ready for this schedule? So they start Michigan State. It's a night game this weekend on Fox. Then they go on the road to Illinois, which is now the big nooner they've announced. So that's a 9 a.m. game on the road in Champaign. Come home to play Michigan, who beat them without throwing a pass last year. Go on the road to play Notre Dame, who is desperate and fighting for their lives the rest of the season, can't afford another loss.
The Fighting Irish.
And then you get at Nebraska. That is your next 5-game stretch for USC in terms of where will your season go. It gets easier in the back half with Northwestern, Iowa, and UCLA
in
there.
Is Oregon on the back half?
Oregon is on the road at the back half. But there's 3 winnable games in the back half. I just, like, to me, everybody, the floor of what could keep
Lincoln Riley employed at USC, if I were a USC fan, is 8-4. They're 3-0, so he's got to go 5-4 the rest of the way. It will largely be dictated by this five-game stretch that starts on Saturday
night. I mean, and I've seen a decent chunk. I saw almost all of their Boston College game, Michigan State. I saw a little bit.
It was a fun game.
I checked into their Youngstown State game because I kind of had to. It wasn't like they were up 45-0 in that thing.
Nope.
Chiles is having he's having a better season. I also have watched him enough to say that offense still looks clunky and weird and it's inconsistent. And being an 18-point road dog, I mean, Lincoln Riley doesn't have an excuse this weekend. I don't care how old the quarterback is. This is the time and the moment. You should be able to run away from this team. I still think Jonathan's a good coach. I don't know how in on Michigan State I am at this point of the season.
USC is rightfully nearly favored by 3 touchdowns.
You know, they're starting to pack the Coliseum a little bit. I think this team is fun for them. That was a fun pick six by the lineman last weekend at Purdue.
It was a long, fat touchdown.
It was a long, fat touchdown. But, you know, go handle your business this weekend. Michigan State's not stellar. That stretch of schedule you mentioned about USC is absolutely brutal.
At Illinois, 9 a.m. next weekend, all of a sudden is when you're circling of like, what if they look good against Indiana this weekend? Illinois returned a lot.
I don't know if I'm ready to conclude that back end easy part, which includes Oregon. I don't know if I'm ready to conclude fully their pass dropping a stupid game.
Yeah.
That's the other part of USC.
Lost to Maryland.
You know, I said it a couple weeks ago. At halftime, they were up 21-13 to Georgia Southern at home. So, yeah, they ended up blowing them out and running away with it. Purdue, kind of a similar thing. It was weird and it was wet and it wasn't sexy in any way, USC style, but they ended up running, you know, pulling away from it.
Yeah.
They have a little bit of that still in them. So we'll see where they go with Lincoln Riley. I tend to look at that schedule and say, do you recalibrate and say, should the floor be 9-3?
I mean, I would argue the floor should have been 9-3. He's in his fourth year at USC,
and you can't win
9 games. But yeah.
But you said 8-4.
To keep your job.
But now I have Danny Moran coming in here talking about how amazing they are on offense. And I'm like, it looks good so far. But
it's great at times, yeah.
You trip up in a game you shouldn't be tripping up in, and maybe this is one of them. I mean, come on.
That's why,
man.
I just have it circled. Like, I'm with you 100% in your analysis of it. Like, Michigan State should not win this game. They're an 18-point underdog for a reason. It's just you're entering a tough stretch for USC, and this is going to almost set the tone for me the rest of the way. Like,
that's fair.
If you go beat Michigan State the way you're supposed to, and this game is, you know, you're up by 21 at the half, and Michigan State can't get much. Michigan State's defense, by the way, has been a problem this year. Boston College hung 40 on them in their own stadium a couple weeks ago, to your point in that game, and Youngstown State scored 24, I want to say, on them in East Lansing. So that's why I circled it, mainly just because of the stretch you're beginning, and go look like USC. Like, you got a coach who's supposed to be one of the best in the sport in year four. These are the games you win going away.
I tend to agree with that. The last one I would point to, Billy Napier does he get fired if they lose to Miami? I don't know. But what I would say is the one I'm circling, Matt Rhule cannot lose at home this weekend.
It's a big one for Matt Rhule.
The head coach has been suspended. It's a true freshman quarterback. Your quarterback has had a great year.
This is your moment.
You're 3-0. You are a traditional pops in your three guy. Like, every single element of this game screams, don't lose.
You got a big win.
Because right now you're riding a real streak in that program where this is the game you lose.
Yeah.
And
build it up. You build it up. Here they come.
Heartbreak City. And I'd be curious to watch the Michigan-Nebraska game because I tend to lean Nebraska. But Michigan's defense, they have horses. I love that Haynes kid in the backfield.
Let's not act like Underwood. Look, he's a freshman. I get it. He'll have some mistakes. But he's also a freak, dude. He ran
through a couple
yards
last weekend. Yeah,
he's showing flashes of like, yeah, that's why that guy was the number one player in the country.
So Michigan's still that physical kind of Harbaugh-ish reputation. I'll be very curious to see because I do think it's a massive game for Matt Rhule in Nebraska.
I totally agree with you there. It's going to be a fun under-the-radar weekend of college football. I know next weekend is the weekend everybody has circled with Georgia, Bama, and Oregon, Penn State, and, you know, Washington, Ohio State, for if you want to
Oregon
use
Oregon State, Houston.
Oregon State, Houston on a Friday night. Who could forget the vicious battle? So I just don't overlook this weekend. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Let's get to a couple of NFL nuggets. I missed one of my favorite segments of the week yesterday, and I'm going to see if I can add to it a little bit and also ask a question about a player. We'll do that coming up next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, I missed NFL Factoids Tuesday yesterday.
I know, dude.
I love NFL Factoids.
I don't like doing the show without you.
It sucks. Solo shows suck.
Swag and I had a lot of fun, but yeah. What I was actually the most I was bummed about two things. One was you were going to miss NFL Factoid Tuesday.
Yes, and I have a factoid I want to throw. I don't know if it made the cut. I want to see if my factoid made the cut.
And also, you didn't get to talk about Herbert.
How's my guy looking, huh?
How's the defense
Who
been
picked
looking?
The Chargers to win the AFC West on this show?
Actually, I don't. Who did I pick?
Did
I pick Chiefs?
I think you picked the Bears to win the AFC West. Too soon.
The Jets?
Sorry.
Did I pick the Jets?
Is that a low blow? Let's see. AFC West.
Football's produced a lot of bad early takes by me, man. College and pro. Clemson's going to be good. The Bears will finally pop.
You took the Chiefs to win the AFC West.
Okay, right.
And you had the Raiders in the playoffs. You did not have the Chargers in the playoffs this year.
Well, the
no
Slater
playoff
injury.
For the Chargers.
Yeah. Where Sprague was wrong.
I mean, look, it's 2 weeks. There's a long ways to go.
I don't know, man.
Quite
not the way
enjoy
he's
that. Herbert seems to be dialed in. By the way, big news for them. If you heard it, we were all listening to Jason Swigard's update, so you clearly heard it there.
How do you not?
In the last break, Khalil Mack has been diagnosed with a dislocated elbow.
Ah,
and he will avoid season-ending injury.
That's good news.
Great news, as heard first by Jason Swigard in his SportsCenter update.
Of course.
Everybody listens to.
I mean, come on.
And never misses. One other thing that I missed talking about yesterday, hold on. Let me get to my NFL factoid, okay? I got a lot going on in my mind
right
now.
You're doing the radio host. I was gone. What did I
miss? I wanted to talk about it. I wanted to talk about those games were so good. Big Balls Baker and the game-winning drive.
That Charger game wasn't good.
It was good if you like watching Justin Herbert shred a defense.
Yeah.
He scored 20 points. Hey. Well, how about Amarion Hampton holds on to a football? I love how they changed that to a Herbert fumble as if that was his fault.
Yeah, somebody texted in StatCast.
Lost fantasy points for it.
Lost him the fantasy matchup because of that change of fumble. I would say early, by the way, and again, early. Hampton and Harvey I was told how much they were going to pop and...
Genty. Yeah, it hasn't not looked like it,
the
man.
The rookie running back's not...
Genty looked lost at times. Some of his pass pro stuff and trying to protect the quarterback against pressure was awful.
I almost
want to
do
night.
A redraft already and be like, Hunter 2? Yeah, Genty at whatever he was taking?
So this probably made your list, but just in case it didn't, I did want to point out, because it happens to be with a quarterback who we also compared to Justin Herbert going into the start of the regular season, and he is 2-0. That's all he knows how to do and win is win. Mm-hmm. Jalen Hurts through two games has two completions of 10 plus air yards. Did that make factoids? I just want to point. I just wanted to have.
No,
moment.
I went down the laundry list of his stat line, and I did it just for you.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
And
that.
I just went. If he's listening, which he isn't. If he was, though, he is loving this. This is getting him through the food poisoning.
Two completions of 10 plus air yard passes on the season. Two times he's thrown the ball more than 10 yards, and it's been completed. Two times. You know who that ties him with in the NFL this year?
Tell me.
Tyrod Taylor, 34th in the league. But all the guy does is win, man. Top five quarterback in the league right there. I'd definitely take him over Justin Herbert.
Zero touchdowns.
It's been terrible. But they're winning because they're good in third and fourth and short, and their defense is good, and he's got Saquon Barkley. How long until A.J. Brown tries to murder him in the locker room?
Did you see...
Is A.J. Brown going to end the season with seven catches?
So it's become like the politics of football nowadays, right? Like, it's so polarizing, and there's one side and there's the other, and God forbid ever be middle ground. The tush push is becoming politics.
Yes.
And there was an Eagles offensive lineman that came out, and he basically said, people calling this out.
Yeah, it was Mailata.
It's Mailata. It makes my blood boil, mate. Like, he just came out and
That's
was like,
yeah.
It's pissing him off. But also, there's other teams that are being asked, why aren't you running the tush push? And they're like, it's a dangerous, stupid play.
Yeah. I think it might have even been Mailata. Maybe it was one of their other offensive linemen that basically said, I hate running it. Because it's like physically,
well, they're just diving
grueling,
down,
dude. Like it's brutal. Like I don't want any part of that play if I'm an offensive lineman. Not to mention it's illegal every time they do it because they're lined up offsides. So I just wanted to point that out on Jalen Hurts. Can I give you one other look at a quarterback that I think we should be giving more conversation to? And this was one of the takes I had coming into the year.
Now, conversation in what way?
Just in terms of like where he ranks in the pantheon. Like I don't think he gets the respect that he deserves in any way, shape, or form.
Okay, I'm curious.
And to me, it's Baker Mayfield. I think Baker Mayfield has been the most slept-on quarterback in the NFL over the last 4 years. Since 2023, he has more passing yards than Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, and Lamar Jackson. He has more touchdowns than Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, and Lamar Jackson. His completion percentage is second to only Burrow, who's missed a ton of time. Mm-hmm. He's at 68.9. Baker's is at 67.4. His quarterback rating is higher than Mahomes and Josh Allen over the last 3 years, and his record is where it's not quite the same as maybe a Lamar or a Mahomes, who's 25-9 or 26-9. He's 21-15. It's more in line a little bit with Josh Allen, although Allen has been better. Maybe I'm just overreacting too much to 1 week, and I was high on them coming into the year because we never really talked about the Bucs, even though they've been in the playoffs the last 2 years.
Oh, we talked about it. I said I thought it was the best possible place you could be was zero people giving you any chance.
Nobody's giving him a chance.
Contender.
And I just, like, why are we? I don't know.
Because he's never done it, Dirt. That's why we do it to some guys. Allen's never done it, but we continue to think he can, and maybe
he's won
an
MVP, and maybe that's different watching him. Like, you want to tell me you think Josh Allen's better than Baker Mayfield? That's fine.
That's not a hot take. That's a normal take.
That's a normal take. But, like, in terms of, like, when we do quarterback pantheons, it's like how many people going into the season had Jalen Hurts as a better quarterback than Baker Mayfield? Well, I guarantee a lot of people did.
Yeah.
And it's just a ridiculous, like, he is better and he deserves more credit and respect.
Well, I'm torn here because I'm a big Baker guy.
Yeah.
I think if you listen to the broadcast, it's pretty evident Troy Aikman is as well.
Yes.
Troy Aikman loves Baker Mayfield.
He's the ultimate, like, white cliches that pop into your head. Baker Mayfield. He's gritty. He's tough. He's clutch.
Gym rat.
He's a gym rat, dude.
Part of the problem,
competitor.
I think, all those stats are great. I think part of his problem is he just has moments where he has very poorly timed interceptions.
Yeah, that's true.
That'll pop up from time to time. The other thing is, we've never seen him do it. I actually think he's kind of properly rated. I just don't think we talk a lot about Tampa in general. They're not one of the sexier teams. Now, should they be? I mean, with that defense, his head coach is a defensive guy. He's had... how many years in a row has he had new coordinators? Because Liam Cohen wasn't their OC very long.
Yeah.
Wasn't the Carolina coach the OC before him?
Porn guy in Carolina,
yeah. So you've had three new OCs, and you can say the system's largely the same because they all work together. Okay, but that's still three new OCs, three different ways of calling plays. He had to rebound after being booted out of Cleveland for a creep.
Yeah.
Had to earn his stripes through Carolina and through the Rams. Like, it's been a great story. I think if you pulled NFL fans...
where do you think he ranks for the majority of NFL fans?
I think he is a universal top 10 guy, and I don't think anybody would argue. So, like, in a way, I think he's kind of...
I guess what I'm asking is, should it be higher than that?
I mean...
the numbers are there.
Nitpicking between, should it be a top 7? Should it be top 8?
Sure.
I don't know.
Is he better than Jordan Love? Is he better than Dak Prescott?
I think he's better
than Prescott. Is he better than Jalen Hurts? See, why do you even have to think about that?
The only way I hesitate on that, and it may be stupid to you because zero touchdowns being thrown so far.
100 passing yards, but hey, he wins.
I know. It's dumb how we do this. The only thing that leaves me hung up on that is some of the big part of that execution of the tush push is Hurts' strength.
Yeah, he's good in short yardage.
Chris Jones was on his back, and he got those extra yards twice.
He has very strong legs.
I can't speak to the whole, you know, the stats will back Baker on that. But yeah, better than Dak. Yeah, I put him in that. If you want to say he's better than Jalen, I'm not going to argue.
I've just reached a point now where I'm legitimately wondering, should he get more consideration for a top five quarterback in the NFL? Because I think he's in that. I think he's a candidate to be a guy.
He would probably
list.
Go Herbert and then the other.
Herbert are like. Numbers are there.
If you gave every team
I would
a
take
chance,
Herbert ahead of him because he's younger and he's bigger and all of that.
If the Bucks could trade right now,
because he's younger and he's, you know, he's bigger and he's a horse, right? Like, I don't disagree with that. I'm just saying, like, the proof is in the pudding in his numbers and what he's accomplished. And just that game was a lot of fun to watch.
So you think he's underrated?
I do think he's underrated.
I think he's properly rated.
Let's do this poll question. Baker Mayfield, properly rated, underrated, or overrated?
Okay.
There's your Baker Mayfield poll question. A couple more NFL nuggets and we'll get to Lucy Burge, top of the hour, back after this on the Fan. All right, welcome back in, 11:53. Poll question is up. Did we get it up, Baker Mayfield?
You know, we're blue chewing our way to get it up.
We are.
We're getting it up. Don't worry.
How about Geno Smith on attempts Monday night, 10-plus air yards, 0 of 10 for 3 touchdowns at one point in the game?
I know Geno is a big thing for Seahawks fans to dunk on after Darnold wins at Pittsburgh, and look, he was bad in that game. I'll admit one interception. I didn't care about the arm punt. Like, he gave his guy a jump ball. He didn't make a good play on it. Whatever.
I actually was more pissed off at him throwing the ball away on fourth down to end the game. Like,
I was asleep by then. I don't know.
Throw a pick. Well, if you have to. Yeah, I was still up for different reasons.
My takeaway isn't so much Geno. I expect that from Geno once in a while. The Charger defense is only averaging 4.3 air yards per throw against their opponents.
Yeah.
The story is their defense.
They have been very good.
As Swag mentioned, Khalil Mack avoids surgery. He will return. And when Return of the Mack hits, it hits. And I told this to Swag yesterday. I think this is an underrated, great situation for them, for both. Khalil Mack is old, right? By football standards, he's going to miss a few weeks. Old Harbaugh, guess who's going to come back late in the season and get that rest, get that ramp up time. And then you hope he stays healthy, because you'd rather have a more healthy Khalil Mack at the end of the year in the playoffs to go chase Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, Bo Nix, whoever it is, than be out or get banged up at the very end of the season.
No doubt about that. Are we ready for Carson Wentz to Wally Pip J.J. McCarthy?
I am 100% hammering Minnesota with Carson Wentz this weekend. I might just tell you now, I'm springing line.
That's a lock of the week for you?
I trust Kevin O'Connell.
Yeah.
And Wentz's,
their offense is going to look better. Mark my words. Save this for Monday if it gets ugly. I guarantee J.J. McCarthy has been terrible this season. He threw like 2 passes late in the game against Chicago, and everybody, oh, all the guy does is win. He's a winner. Dude, so they lost 3 games. He's been terrible, and that's okay. He's a rookie. He's supposed to be terrible. But they're also a team, or not a rookie, but you get my point, rookie in playing time. They're a team that won 14 games last year. Like, they had expectations. Carson Wentz, I believe I read, is going to become the first quarterback in the history of the NFL to start a game for 6 different teams in 6 consecutive seasons. Can you name all the teams?
Rams.
Yep. Eagles, obviously. Eagles run.
Yeah. No, I can't.
Colts. Remember, he had the year as a starter in Indy.
Did he start in the Chiefs?
He started a game for the Chiefs. And there's one more in there that I kind of forgot about. After Indy, he went to
Washington.
Yeah.
I don't know why I vaguely remember that one.
11 touchdowns and 9 picks. So he'll start for his 6th different team in 6 different seasons, consecutive seasons. First guy to ever do that in NFL history.
Poll question up. Baker Mayfield is overrated, properly rated, underrated.
Boom goes the dynamite. Lots to get to in the final hour. Statter story at 9:15. We kick things off, though, with Lucy Burge. What are her gambling picks? Who's hitting a dong tonight? Is Kyle Raleigh hitting another one? Lucy Burge kicks off the final hour next. 105.1 FM, The Fam.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, 2-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.